This is Holiday Readings and Remembrances, reflections on the season as told by members of the Northern Michigan University and surrounding communities. I'm Stan Wright, your host. In this edition, we're going to hear a story called The Journey, as told by former assistant to the president at Northern Michigan University, Matt Sorrell.
The Journey. He was a good man. He was just. He knew his place, and the place that belonged to others. He lived accordingly. Of course, he was only a carpenter, and that's a poor enough lot in our district, but it seemed to suit him. In fact, there was an occasion some years ago when a word from me in the right place would have helped to improve his situation, but he would have none of it. It appeared a foolish refusal to me, and I told him so at the time. I suppose I knew him as well as any man. We were distantly related, both descending from King David's royal line, although I'd never heard him say it. It was to me he came over a year ago when he wished to become espoused to the girl Mary from Sepphoris. I am one of the elders in the synagogue in our village. Perhaps you know it? Nazareth in Galilee? It's on the Legion Road while going north to Tiberias. You'll see it after a climb to a high point, and there, spread out before you, is Nazareth. Most everyone who travels there stops at the hill crest before continuing on to the village to look back on the way he came. There's no lovelier view in all Palestine. And to the west of the horizon rises the haunting purple shadow of Karmala. I've stood there at sunset when the twilight already rests heavy on the white houses of Nazareth, and the breeze begins to murmur from the cypresses on the slopes, and I watch the warm radiance of the sinking sun pour its golden light over the countryside, and every dwelling below glimmers with a soft inward fire. But I am far from my story. This Joseph, this man of whom I speak, one could not help but like him, even though he did keep his own counsel more than I thought necessary. For all his reserve and guileless ways, he was a respected man in our community. He was far from prudent, though, and I thought him stubborn many times. I often told him that it was sheer folly for him to take Mary, his wife, down to David's city for the registering. After all, she was with child, and her time was near. It would have been a simple thing to hold her excused from the journey. "Mary wants to go," he told me. "She feels it is her duty." Well, such passive acceptance of her whim on his part angered me. "Why, man," I told him, "you're her husband. Assert yourself. Such a trip would be dangerous. Think of the child." He smiled at me in that funny way he had. "God will watch over the child," he said. That rather surprised me, hearing him say this, for I didn't think him a religious man. He had never shown it. And as I say, I think I knew him well. Well, as it happened, I traveled with them down to Bethlehem. We left Nazareth one dreary morning before sunrise, following the Legion Road as far as Na'im, there joining the Eastern Caravan route onto Esaron. We had two burros, mine and Joseph's. His, a poor animal that looked hardly capable of carrying the slight figure of the girl Mary. I offered to share my animal with him, but the carpenter seemed content to walk along by his wife's side. We reached Sikken that evening, and were fortunate to find lodging at an inn whose keeper I had known from previous visits. But it was during the next day's journey up to Jerusalem that I became aware of the nearness of Mary's time. It's a hard road to Jerusalem, steep and rocky, and the dust is dry and stings your nostrils. As the day wore on, I noticed how hard it was for the girl to keep herself upright on the burro's back. Joseph couldn't have seen this, for he said nothing until we reached the gates of the city itself. Then Mary called him over to her and said something I couldn't hear. He turned to me and said, "Mary and I will continue on to Bethlehem tonight." Needless to say, I was dumbfounded and ready to protest. But then I saw Mary's face. and her eyes were raised to mine. I still don't know what it was, but I heard myself offering to go on with them, although against my better judgment, for the afternoon was well gone. The Bethlehem Road, which winds down from the heights of Jerusalem, is alarmingly steep and dangerous, even for beasts of burden. And in the twilight that evening I caught my breath in fear each time my beast faltered. Joseph and his wife were ahead of me. She had one hand on his shoulder all the way. Bethlehem's streets were a confusion of sights and sounds that night, people everywhere jostling one another, laughing, shouting. Such a scene after a hard day's journey normally would have lifted my spirits and cheered me, but not so that night. What it was that made my heart sad, I cannot say. But as I followed Joseph and Mary through the noisy throng, I thought to myself, they don't belong here, not in this mob. I left them at the door of an inn, where they would seek lodging, and made my way to the house of my uncle, where I knew a room and some warm food would be waiting for me. All during supper I kept thinking of them, especially the girl Mary. After I had eaten, I walked to the inn. They weren't there.
The Galilean and his wife? They were here.
The innkeeper was a rough man.
We had no room for them. These are busy times. My wife wanted to let them stay as the girl's time was near, but we had no room.
It was from a stable boy at the yard of an adjoining property that I learned of them.
Are you looking for the carpenter, Joseph, and his wife? I can show you where they are, he said.
He took me down through Bethlehem's narrow, sleeping streets that were quiet now, and out into the fields where the wind rustled softly through the olive trees. It was a bitterly cold night, and I remember wishing I had worn something warmer. I asked the boy, how far? He didn't answer me. Suddenly we heard singing. It came from somewhere up ahead of us. It was a joyous song. I know the song. It's one that shepherds sing during their long night watches on the open hillsides. And as we hurried on, we saw a band of these men coming toward us, tattered cloaks on their broad shoulders, hardly enough to keep out the cold on such a night. But the eyes and faces of these men glowed with a warmth I had never before seen. Their voices, when they sang as they hailed us, were on fire with that same warmth.
Did you see it too?
They called to us. See what? My companion shouted.
Why, the great light, the great heavenly multitude. Well, I couldn't believe my ears and spoke scornfully to one of the shepherds who appeared to be the leader of the group. Why, man, you're drunk. You've seen no such light. We have seen it, they all said, and we have heard the angel's song and are on our way now to David's city to see with our own eyes this thing of which the angel spoke.
I was provoked now. Such fantastic talk always has disturbed me. I'm a religious man, but not a fool. My voice was sharp when I spoke.
What is this thing you speak of? What foolishness?
The leader, a big man with a pleasant ruddy face, answered me.
Sir, we did see such a light, and from this light an angel of God appeared to us and told us of joyous tidings of a Savior's birth. Surely you have looked for the Messiah?
Well, every man is to look for the Messiah, I told him, but what is this blasphemy you speak of?
It is no blasphemy, he said. Tonight we have seen God's angel, and have been told that tonight there is born in Bethlehem the world's Savior, the Christ. That is all. We wish you no trouble. I pray you, sir, if you ought know of this.
I'd have no more of such idiocy, and turned to my companion, who'd been silent all the time. Come, I said, let's be on our way and leave these idiots to their wine.
The young stable boy seemed not to hear me. He stood there without moving.
Well, are you coming?
He turned to the shepherds and said,
Wait, I can show you where he is, whom you seek.
and I was helpless to do anything but follow that mad procession. My concern for Joseph and his wife had steadily grown. This lunatic stable boy was my sole hope of finding them. He led us through an olive grove, out into the open hillside that rises to some rock formations that stretches for a mile or more along a ridge to the south of the town. And as we walked, the shepherds took up their song, and in spite of myself, I found myself humming with them. It was a night of beauty. Stars were spilled across the sky, and cares abandoned. I found myself thinking, angels could well sing on a night like this. But I put it out of my mind as soon as it came. I'm opposed to sentiment. I'm not sure who saw it first, but suddenly the shepherds stopped their singing, and one of them pointed with his staff. But there was no need for that. We all saw it. The amazing thing is we hadn't seen it sooner. Ahead of us in the sky, in what seemed to be an opening in the rocks in the hillside, was a star. But it was more than that. It was like many stars swollen into one. I've thought back on that night many times, and I'm convinced what we saw was a comet. But that night it seemed not to be. It appeared as a sign sent to Earth. A sign of what, I do not know. Suddenly I was by myself. The stable boy and the shepherds had run off up the hill and disappeared among the rocks. I felt cold there, alone, and reluctantly followed them. Well, needless to say, my patience was about exhausted. Such foolishness as this was maddening, especially when I was concerned over my friends from Nazareth. The shepherds had gone into one of the many caves that line the hills in that section of the country. Some of them are used as stables for oxen and other cattle. Such a one was this, into which I followed them. It was a foul place, and my scorn rightly increased when I thought of the fool's errand that had brought me here. I stood for a minute at the cave's mouth before I went in. The wind that blew on the hillside below was silent, as if it were listening and watchful. Perhaps it was that quiet that gave me the feeling of unease. It was gloomy inside, and what light there was came from an ancient lantern from a manger. And there were animals in the cave, and in the shadows I could hear them stirring. The air was heavy with their smell. The shepherds were there, and the stable boy, kneeling on the cold ground. Two others knelt there too, a man and a woman. Why, it was the carpenter from Nazareth, Joseph, and his wife Mary. And in the manger, lying on the straw, was a newborn child. For a minute or more, I was dumbfounded, as you can imagine. But then righteous anger stirred within me. What is this? The shepherds had come to see all their great talk about a Messiah, an angel of God, and then this squalor, this fetid cavern in the hillside. Well, I thank God that I could see the reality. Why, this was only the carpenter from my own village of Nazareth and his wife, plain people from the country. I could see that. Heaven only knows what those shepherds and the stable boy saw in their childlike ignorance, or rather thought what they were seeing. Quietly I left the spot and went back to the town and my uncle's house. I didn't sleep well that night, however, and went early the next morning to be enrolled. That afternoon I started back to Nazareth alone. Soon after, news reached us of King Herod's fanatical slaughter of all the male children under 2 years old. Well, it's quite probable that Joseph's child was killed too, when the carpenter and his wife didn't return to Nazareth. There was a rumor, however, that they had gone to Egypt and taken the child with them to escape Herod's edict. I've prayed that this might be so, for it was a nice child. I can see it lying there in the manger,
with tiny arms outstretched as if to embrace the world.
Holiday Readings and Remembrances is a Public Radio 90 production produced at the WNMU-FM studios in the Learning Resources Center on the campus of Northern Michigan University. I'm your producer and host, Stan Wright. Thanks for listening, and happy holidays.